Kutvach, and however you say that in Spanish, I guess that's one or other greeting we can say. Can't hear? How do you do that? Is that better? All right, let's start again. Good evening, Shavua Tov, Kutvach, and everything else like that. On behalf of Mamas Torah Links and Shalom Torah Academy, it's my great pleasure to welcome all of you here this evening. And I can definitely assure you that you are going to be hearing an incredible story, an incredible tale from a remarkable woman. And the reason why I'm so confident in saying that is because I've had the privilege and honor of hearing her already a couple times over Shabbos. And I must tell you, it's a truly remarkable and amazing story. And I'm confident, fully confident, that every single one of us, every single one of you as individuals, will walk out of here tremendously, tremendously inspired. You can purchase one of her books that some of them, I think, are still left outside. Her first book, My Sister the Jew, is an incredible story that my mother actually told me about and shared with me several years back, and that's why I became familiar with the Huva Grace story. But once again, an incredible and remarkable story. Before I actually call upon Ahuva to address us tonight, I just wanted to share the following thought with you very quickly. I would be remiss if I didn't quote a verse in this week's portion, which Rabbi Eisenberg actually earlier today, for those of you who were in the family room with us, he remarked that one of the verses in this week's Torah portion states that the reason why God, the reason why Hashem favored and loved Abraham Avinu, Abraham our forefather, so much was due to the fact that he, Abraham, instructed his children to follow along the path of Hashem, to follow along the path of God, to follow the path of mitzvot. And of course, when we have such a beautiful event like this in Shalom Torah Academy, Shalom Torah Academy is picking up exactly where Avraham Avinu left off and giving all of our children a wonderful, beautiful Jewish education, which every single one of them so truly deserves. So Yashar Koyach to Rabbi Lapa and Shalom Torah Academy. For those, give them a big round of applause. For those children and those families who, for whatever the reason, are not able to avail themselves to such a beautiful education, we at Mamas Torah Links do our best to give them a good taste, a strong foundation of their Jewish heritage over at our Sunday school, which once again also takes place right here in Shalom Torah Academy. I'd like to just share with you, there's two classes that are about to take place. One of them actually just started. There's a Hebrew reading class for adults. Never too late. We're all children. We all have to be learning and growing. There's a Hebrew reading class taking place here at 10:15 a.m. Sunday mornings over the next 5 weeks, and you too can learn to read Hebrew in 5 easy sessions. And if reading Hebrew is not your cup of tea, but rather you'd like to know how to fly around and perform all sorts of witchcraft and levitational tricks and everything like that, you too can become a Kabbalist with Rabbi Oritz. He's starting his series off in the library. From there, he'll be floating over to Mama Terling's Learning Center, starting Tuesday, December 9th. And if you follow him over, he'll be in the center, our learning center, the 16th, 23rd, and 30th, all of them in the month of December. So look out for those events, and please feel free to join us for those events and any other events that we'll be hosting. At this point, I don't want to delay anyone else. At this point, I'd like to introduce Ahuva Gray. Please welcome her.
Good evening. Thank you so much. Can you hear me out there? I'm going to start taking a lesson from these young people. And Latu Aleph, the girls told me I should pretend that I've lost my voice all the time and more often. But I really did there for a few minutes lose my voice, and I thought I better preserve it. This has been a lovely Shabbaton, and it's been an extremely enjoyable experience for me. And with your permission, since I'm turning my third book in, I'm going to include this Shabbaton in that book. So it'll be my pleasure, because I've been thoroughly impressed with your community and the work that the rabbis and rebbetzins are doing here. What I'm going to do with you this evening is share a vignette of short stories and explain to you how I, as an ordained minister, I went to Israel my first time, and the first time I visited Israel, I knew I wanted to live there, and I was willing to leave everyone and everything behind to fulfill that vision. Often, when I lecture at seminaries and universities, university students can ask very difficult questions. And they ask me, Ahuva, how do you make sense of your journey and what were the spiritual pushes and pulls along the way that could cause a person like yourself to make such a radical metamorphosis? The best way I have of explaining my story is the same way the Vilna Gaon explains it. It is brought down that before the Torah was given over to the Jewish people at Har Sinai, that Hashem went around to all the other nations. And even though the majority of those people turned the Torah down, it is brought down that there were individual souls among those people that wanted the Torah, and they explained them as a Gilgul, as a reincarnation of one of those neshamas, because that's probably the best way I have of explaining it as well. Because if someone had said to me, I'll have to say 16 years ago, you are going to move to Israel and you are going to convert to Judaism, I would have said you are crazy. In fact, that's precisely what a dear friend said to me. I was an entrepreneur. I owned my own travel agency specializing in group movements to Israel, Egypt, and Greece. I was with a group of Catholics, and we were coming around this first curve from Tel Aviv into Yerushalayim, and my heart started pulsating like it was coming out of my chest. And I said, oh my God, I'm at home. When I said that, I really meant it, because I used to be a flight attendant. I am one of these people that happen to love the book of Isaiah, and Isaiah 40 has always been my favorite chapter in that book of the prophets. And there are some verses, some pasukim in there that says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, lift up your voice, lift it up with strength, say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God, behold Hashem will come with a strong arm, and his reward is with him. He should gather his sheep unto himself and lead his flock like a shepherd. After I quoted those verses, I started singing to the top of my lungs. There was this lovely Catholic lady sitting next to me, and she looked at me like I was losing my mind. And I looked at her and said this. I said, I'm going to live in Israel one day. And she looked at me with a smirk on her face as if to say, yeah, sure. And I said to myself, I don't care if this lady believes me or not, because I probably will not ever see her again. But I said, if anyone will believe me, Thomas Johnson, that I was licensed with in the ministry in Los Angeles, he will believe me. I was jet-lagged. Of course, I took LL Airlines back to Los Angeles, and I rested up that evening. I called Thomas Johnson the next morning. I want to preface this story by saying, if you had a praying grandmother, which I did, and she taught you the Tehillim, the book of Psalms, when you were 4 years old, of all the sites, and I'll give you a hint, in Jerusalem, which site do you think would have had the most impact on my life on that first visit to Eretz Israel? Did someone say the Kotel? You're brilliant. Here I was, this ordained minister, and I had this big plastic bag full of prayer requests. And don't kid yourself, Christians know the significance of that holy site. So I was there for the first time putting all of these prayer requests in the cracks in the wall, excuse me, and about 45 minutes later, I don't really know how long it was exactly, I felt this hand tapping me on the shoulder, and it was a lady from the bus. And she said, excuse me, but the bus is leaving. Here I was, a Protestant ordained minister, and visiting the Kotel for the first time. I had seen pictures about it, I'd read about it. I found myself backing back from the Kotel because I wanted that holy site to be forever embedded in my mind. And not only that, the Psalms that I quoted as I was backing back at Psalms 121, and I know we don't quote Tehillim between Kiskiya and Hatzos, but for learning purposes it's okay. The psalm that came to my mind that particular day was Psalms 121. It says, I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from which cometh my help. Thank you so much. All of my help cometh from Hashem. He will not suffer your foot to be moved. Behold, he that keepeth Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Hashem is thy shade upon thy right hand. The sun shall not smite thee by day nor the moon by night. He will preserve you from evil. He'll preserve your soul. He'll preserve your going out and coming in from this time forth, even from evermore. Even today, if something is bothering me, I have a religious driver in Jerusalem, and I go to the Kotel, and it doesn't matter what it is or which gate I walk through, but as soon as I walk through one of those gates to the Kotel, it's whatever's bothering me seems to dissipate. Later that day, I met Thomas Johnson for lunch, and this was a person that knew me very, very well. And I was explaining to him all these exciting places that I'd read about, studied about, and now my feet had literally walked on this holy soil. And at the end of that hour and a half conversation, I looked at Thomas Johnson and I said, Thomas, I know you're not going to believe this, but I'm going to live in Israel one day. And he said to me this, they used to call me Sister in the church, and my birth name is Dolores. He said, Sister Dolores, please don't tell anyone that you're losing it. However, I want you to know tonight, I stand here before you, I am not losing it. When I write about that story in my first book entitled My Sister the Jew, I explain it this way. When you have a dream and you have a vision and you share it with people before its fruition, they may laugh at you, but so what? I have the dream and vision that I tucked away in my heart. There is a pasuk in Micah 3 and 6 that says, the vision is yet for an appointed time, and in the end, the vision will speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, it will surely come. The catalyst for my making my decision to move to the land of Eretz Israel, do we have any Californians in this room by any chance? That's perfectly, we do? Are you from California? Well, you are going to remember this, and I lectured in California before I came to the East Coast, and the whole audience was with me when I shared this part of my story. This day will be forever embedded in my mind. It happened January 17, 1994. It was the North Ridge earthquake, and I am a valley girl. I lived in the San Fernando Valley, and I had a practice of getting up at 5 o'clock every morning to daven, to pray. Now, after that first visit to the land of Israel, I went back 14 times in 4 years. Everyone that knew me thought I was absolutely losing my mind. It was like a magnet. I simply could not stay away, and I cannot stay away today. However, on one of those visits, I happened to end up in the mystical city of Tzfat, and I love reading, so I visit bookstores when I'm traveling. And I went to the bookstore this particular day, and I saw a book on there that said Siddur, Jewish prayer book. I had not ever seen one before in my life. I picked it up off this shelf. It had Hebrew on one side and English on the other. And I looked at these prayers and I said, these are the most beautiful prayers I have ever seen in my life. I purchased that Siddur that particular day. I got back on the bus and happened to open up to Birkat HaMazon. I'd not ever seen that before either. And I was reading, I was young and now I'm old, and I've not seen a righteous man forsaken, nor his children begging for bread. Hashem will bless his people with Hashem will bless his people with peace. I started sobbing on the bus that particular day because I realized that all the moral, ethical teaching that my parents and grandparents had taught me at a very early age was contained in that Siddur. I had read in the Tehillim that King David davened 3 times a day. So here I was, this ordained minister, davening 3 times a day. Not only that, I felt that it was only proper that if I was sleeping, before I talked to God, I should get up and wash my hands. I knew nothing about Mode Ani, and I knew nothing about what Torah-observant Jews do on a daily basis. So here I was, this ordained minister, davening from my Siddur 3 times a day. And not only that, I taught myself the Hebrew alphabet. And when I first started davening from that Siddur, it used to take me 4 hours, then 3.5 hours, then 3 hours, then 2.5 hours, 2 hours, and finally today, Baruch Hashem, I can daven in Hebrew in 40 minutes. So here I was, an ordained minister, washing my hands, knew nothing about Mode Ani. davening from my siddur three times a day. And not only that, I also had a mezuzah on my door. And you are probably wondering, what on earth would an ordained minister be doing with a mezuzah on her door? These are all very, very Jewish practices, I know. And I look very Jewish as well. The last church that I used to attend in Los Angeles was a very erudite man. His name was Dr. Charles C. Queen. And he had been to Israel many, many, many times before my first visit. And on one of those visits, he bought a mezuzah for everyone in his congregation. And I had read in the Torah how to hang it up properly. So I had it hanging up on my door properly. One day, there was this lovely Jewish man that rung the bell to my condominium. And I buzzed him in the security gate. And not only that, he came up the stairs. And I let him in the door, and he was selling subscriptions to the LA Times. And he asked me if I would like to receive the paper, and I said, no, thank you. I already received the paper. About 2 seconds later, there was a knock at the door, and it was that same young man. And he said, excuse me, are you Jewish? And I said, no. He said, could you please explain to me why you have a mezuzah on your door? And I told him the same thing I just told you. This young man looked at me, and he almost plopped. And he said this. He says, you are a very unusual person. He said, I have not ever, ever heard of an ordained minister with a mezuzah on her door. And I said, neither have I. And I'm just like any other Jewish mother. He was backing down the stairs backwards. And he kept saying, I mean, I didn't have my hair twisted in braids like this, but he just probably had not ever seen an ordained minister with a mezuzah on her door. And I'm like any other Jewish mother. I simply said to him, please don't hurt yourself backing down those stairs. And he said to me, you're a very unusual person. I have not ever heard of an ordained minister with a mezuzah on her door. January 17th, 1994, it was 4:30 a.m. in the morning, and I said, I think I will stay in bed just a bit longer. At 4:32 a.m., my bed starts shaking very violently. Now, I am not a fearful person, and I used to be a flight attendant, so at first, when the bed starts shaking, I said, perhaps this is a dream, and you're on an airplane. However, when I was shaken from the bed to the floor, I said, get up, girl. It's not a dream. It's an earthquake. I got up. I started running. I fell down the second time by a stairwell that led to my loft. There was this wood beam in the ceiling with plants dangling back and forth, and it looked like it was going to come tumbling down on my head, as well as the plants. And the Tehillim that came to my mind this particular morning, may my grandmother rest in peace, was Psalms 24 that says, the earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof, the world, and they that dwell therein. He has established it upon the seas and founded upon the floods. Who shall ascend unto the holy hills of Hashem, or who shall stand in his holy place? He that has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul unto vanity nor sworn deceitfully, he shall receive the blessings of Hashem and the righteousness of the God of his salvation. This is the generation that seek you, that seek your face, O Jacob, Shelah. Lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lifted up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is the King of glory? The Lord of hosts is the King of glory. By the time I got to that last pasuk, I ran down the stairs. There was a neighbor screaming very violently. I started praying with the neighbor. She and I went and sat by the jacuzzi. As I sat there this particular morning, I said to myself this, you have been saying you want to move to Israel. I made that decision that particular night. This earthquake was one of the strongest ones we have had in Southern California. It registered 6.7 on the Richter scale. It was on two faults that crisscrossed each other. It's the worst jolting I have ever experienced. And not only that, after I sat down there for about 2 hours, I finally got the, and the aftershocks were just as potent as the original impact. 2 hours later, I got the courage to go back up to my condominium. And I want you to know, I was very steeped in my goshness, my materialism, and I had plenty of it. I went back up to my condominium, I opened the door, and when I opened that door, I literally could not believe my eyes. Every piece of my antique furniture was turned upside down. And not only that, those plants that were dangling from the ceiling were all on the floor in a heap of dirt. And ladies, when I went in the kitchen and saw my crystal and china broken that I bought in London, I almost plucked. Then my attention shifted from my material possessions that I had worked for 48 years, and they were all in a heap of dirt and cracked and broken. My attention shifted to my sister who lives in Beverly Hills. Normally, I would take the San Diego-Santa Monica freeway to my sister, but this time I said, it's going to take me longer, but I'm going to surface and take the local streets. Later that day, I don't remember what time it was that morning as I was driving to my sister's, I turned the radio on, and sure enough, the very intersection that I would have had to take in to get to Beverly Hills from the San Fernando Valley, that intersection, a policeman had plunged to his death because the freeway had cracked. Tonight I know, and many years I've known, that it was divine providence, Hashkafa Pratis, that I took the local streets, because I might not be standing here before you tonight. I get to my sister's. The only thing that had happened to her was a lamppost had fallen on her Cherokee Jeep. And not only that, the telephone lines were still down, and our parents had been trying to get through to us for hours. My mother, may she rest in peace, I could think a thought, and she would know my thoughts. Finally, they got through to us. My sister answered the phone. My mother said, put Dolores on the phone. I know she's moving. I could hear my dad in the background saying, is Dolores moving back to Chicago, my birthplace? And I said to my mother, I said, Mom, tell Dad I'm not moving back to Chicago. I'm moving to Israel. And my mother paused for a minute, and her voice went up so loud, and she said to me this, Dolores, and I know some of you in this room have heard this, and you have probably said this to your children. My mother said this. She said, Dolores, you used to be one of the most obedient children I had. She says, I'm going to put your father on the phone, and perhaps your dad can talk some sense into you. My father said this. He says, Dolores, I think you're just a bit shaken up by the earthquake. I said, Dad, you're right. He said, calm down. We'll call you back in a couple of days, and we'll discuss this. My parents called me back in 2 days, and when they saw they could not talk me out of this decision, they gave me their blessings. But my father said this. He said, Dolores, where are you going to live? How are you going to support yourself? And he says, you don't know the language. Now, I'd like to preface this by saying, if you plan on making Aliyah, do it in a much more intelligent manner than what I did it in. I said to my dad this. I said, Dad, I have no idea where I'm going to live. I have no idea how I'm going to support myself. And I said, I'll learn the language. Baruch Hashem, in my humble opinion, when I moved to Eretz Israel, Hashem was really watching out for me. I moved to one of the most beautiful communities in the whole wide world. It is Bayit Vegan. It translates as house and garden. I was invited there for my first Shabbos by De Beers and the Schwartzbaums. Abraham Schwartzbaum wrote the Bamboo Cradle. And when we were walking down the street that Friday night, and I could feel the Kedusha. And not only that, when you left everyone and everything behind, you just want to be in a place that feels like home. Bayit Vegan felt like home to me. And what's really, really interesting, often when I lecture, the seminary girls and some of the university students will ask me, Ahuva, what is it like for you being African-American and living in that Haredi neighborhood? And I simply say that I moved from one black neighborhood to another black neighborhood. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam she'echonu yeh bidbaro. I have no problems whatsoever living in Bayit Vegan. And I want to pause for just a minute and talk about my neighborhood. Bayit Vegan is one of the most awesome, incredible communities in the whole wide world. Not only that, we are very, very eclectic. It is known as a Haredi neighborhood, but we are getting a lot more French people in there. We have a lot of people from England, lots of Americans, Canadians, and we're simply just from all over. But it is an incredible community. The next challenge I faced is I had to go to the Jerusalem Best End and open up my file, my conversion case, to convert. And they call it a tikkun in Israel. Now, before I went, the rabbis had already explained to me that Ahuva, they're going to turn you down. They're going to make it very difficult for you. So I was prepared for that. And a friend of mine that I had met, she had converted about 25 years ago at that time. And she said to me this. She said, Ahuva, before I completed my conversion, she says, I was wondering if I was going to make it through it alive. That was a very profound statement, and that's probably about the best way, Lato Ellis, that I have of explaining going through a conversion in Jerusalem. because in my first book, I call it a Harvard conversion, because Harvard University is the most difficult university to get in America. I went to the Jerusalem Beth Din. I walked in the door, and there was these three lovely rabbis there with black suits and long white beards, and they looked at me, and they were saying, everything in Israel is done in Hebrew, and my Hebrew wasn't that good at that time, and it's not a whole lot better now. But they looked at me, and they say, Atah medaber anglit, ibrit, and I said, lo. And then the rabbi banged on the desk, and he said, well, come back when you can speak Hebrew. And I said, but that could be forever. And it's looking like it's taken that long. My friend had to literally carry me out the door. But you know what? In my humble opinion, the rabbis have every right to make it difficult for us when we come and stand before them of another ethnicity and say we want to be a Jew, because in all reality, we don't have a clue of what we're getting into. They found out that I was an ordained minister. I did not go into the door and tell them that, but in Jerusalem what happens is, Lato Ellis, I say they're like the FBI, because they thoroughly investigate you, and they found out I was an ordained minister, closed my file, refused to reopen it, and one morning when I was davening the Shemoneh Esrei, we have a part in there where we can pause and make a spontaneous request, I simply said this. I said, Hashem, they have closed my file, refused to reopen it, now what are you going to do? Because I had no clue of what I was going to do. Finished davening, and all of a sudden, Rabbi Cohen, he is the chief rabbi of Haifa. His name just simply popped into my head. I had been privileged to have a meal with him and his wife a few years earlier. I didn't even know if Rabbi Cohen was going to remember who I was. I called his office, and his secretary put him on the phone. I told him the dilemma that I was in. He was instrumental in getting my file reopened. About 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from his secretary. She put Rabbi Cohen on the phone, and he told me that I was going to be having my final interview with the chief rabbi, Rabbi Bakshi Doran, and the High Court Gadol in the Old City. No one but no one in Bais Vagan had ever heard of a chief rabbi getting involved in a conversion case, and I simply said nothing in my life has been simple. One of my neighbors, Asnat Goldman, found out I was going for my fourth interview. That's what I love about living in a religious neighborhood, because whatever you're going through, you do not go through it alone. I went by her house. She loaned me a pleated skirt, cardigan, sweater, and a beige blouse. I went back to the dorm at Nishmat, pulled my hair back in a ponytail. I put on pearl earrings and a necklace, and one of my roommates from the East Coast, Judy, looked at me and she said, Ahuva, you look like you were born Haredi. I said, good. I didn't sleep the entire night. Okay. What do you call us? Right. I didn't sleep the entire night. I got up the next morning and put that same outfit back on. I went to the High Court Gadol in the Old City, and I walked in the door, and Rabbi Bakshi Doran was such a gentleman. He followed such protocol. He questioned me extensively about my background. He sent me outside of that door, and I must have been out there for about 15 minutes. I quoted every Tehillim I know. He called me back in the room and questioned me extensively for 45 minutes. That was my interview to determine if they were going to complete this conversion process. He looked at me at the end of that time, and he said, Ms. Gray, we will be getting back with you in a few days. What happens in Israel is this. If the rabbis try to complete all of the conversion cases before Passover, because Pesach, it's the redemption of the Jewish people, and it's the redemption of every Jewish neshama. Now, I have a sales and marketing background, time management, and if you say you're going to call me and you don't, guess what? I call you. I call that administrative office 3 and 4 times a day. This rabbi had a lot of supplement, a lot of patients. Seems like I got the same person every day. By about the third day, he said to me this. He says, Ahuva. He says, you are a Jew. He says, we're just waiting for the third signature. He said, in fact, tomorrow you can come and pick up your papers. Everyone in Bais Vagan got real excited. And not only that, my rabbi and my rebbetzin said, oh, who would take someone to the mikvah with you that you're very close to? So Netanella Ritchie, a dear friend, agreed to go with me. And not only that, we went and picked up my papers first. And then the next day we went to the mikvah. And when we got back to Bais Vagan, she had to stop home and check on her children. because she had left her 5-year-old son there alone, Avraham Moshe. And when we walked through the door, he looked at his mother, he looked back at me, he looked at his mother again, and he says to his mother in Hebrew, Ima, why is the hoo still black? This is a very intelligent child, and you're in good company because audiences all over the world laugh when I share that part of my story. And when his mother told me what the child said, I started laughing as well. And you ought to see him now when I see him on the street. So he's much taller than I am. He's this big, strong, grown-up kid now. And we look at each other, and before we even speak, we just start laughing. You know? And we know what each other is thinking, and we just laugh, and then we'll say, how are you doing? After we left her house, I remembered that Rebbe Nita Hankin said to come directly back to Nishmat. I went to Nishmat, the door was locked, and I said, this is strange, because Rebbe Nita Hankin is so serious about learning, she doesn't close the seminary for anything. And then I remember she said to come to the Bet Midrash, the study hall. I walked around the corner of Abu Hab, kissed the mezuzah for a first time as a Jew. I walked in the door, they had this huge sign that said, Simon Tov, Mazel Tov, Ahuva. Girls, they had closed the entire seminary down. The English-speaking girls were there. The Hebrew-speaking girls were there. Everyone was saying, speech, speech. I was speechless. I know that's hard to believe. The only thing I could think to say to them is this, is you have shown me such love, and I don't know that I've experienced this kind of love in my life. And converting to Judaism is the most quality decision I have ever made. Not only that, after that lovely Sa'uda at Nishmat, I moved out of the dorm with those young girls because here I was, this old woman, and I need to go to bed and get some rest at night. Nothing offensive, young ladies. And even earplugs didn't help this. I moved into my second apartment in Bais Vagan, and as I was moving in, my sister called me, and she called to wish me a happy birthday. And my sister says, happy birthday. And I said to her, Nellie, you won't believe it, but I went to the mikvah today, and my sister said, yay, we did it. My family has always supported me throughout all my mushagas. And when I first moved to Eretz Israel, my brother Ezra, we have all these biblical names in our family. My father, grandfather, great-grandfather named Ezra, my brother named Ezra. I have a niece named Shana and a nephew named Isaiah. So I move into my second apartment, and my sister wishes me this beautiful happy birthday. And not only that, and I tell her that I've been to the mikvah, my conversion process is completed. 10 days later, I got the most beautiful birthday card in the mail. She signed it, and they put $100 in there. At that time, that was a lot of money for a seminary student. And they signed that card, and they said this, congratulations, my sister the Jew, we're very proud of you. My two brothers, Kaninahara and my sister, signed it. Now, I have known since I was a teenager I was going to write a book. Everyone that knew me in grade school, high school, college, and throughout my corporate career in America knew that I was going to write this book. Finally, after going to the mikvah, I sat down in the midst of all those boxes, found a legal pad and pen. I did not even have a computer at that time, but I certainly have a Dell laptop now, and this is not an advertisement for Dell laptop. I started writing my first book, and I completed my first book, My Sister the Jew, in 5 months, and the only reason I was able to do that is because my neighbors sent me over all the leftover cholent, so I had 3 meals a day, and my house was not immaculate, and I do like a clean house, but when you're trying to write a book, you do what you have to do. I got up every morning at 5 o'clock, and I would work until about midnight. I turned it in to the publisher, and it was more editing, re-editing, decided what's going in, what's coming out. I want you to know that I did not want my picture on the cover of a book. And when the publisher called me and said he was putting my picture on the cover of the book, I almost screamed, and I'm normally a very calm person. Excuse me. And I said, you can't do that. I said, it's not modest, it's not sinua, it's intrusive. And I had this long list of objections. And he said to me very calmly, he says, Ahuva, ask your rabbi a shaila, a question. I hung up the phone, I called my rabbi, I was sure he was going to agree with me because I called them my Abba and Ima, and I told him everything that the publisher had said, and I repeated to him everything I repeated to the publisher. He listened very calmly, And when I finished, she said to me, Ahuva, it will sell more books. I said, what? I said, put Ema on the phone. I know some of you have experienced this, right? So she comes to the phone, and she says, Ahuvala, your Abba is right. This is a true story. I couldn't believe it. I hung up the phone, and I started crying. I said, I don't believe it. At any rate, the first book comes out, and I'm asked to come and lecture all over the world to such exotic places as Hong Kong, all over Australia, South Africa, Brussels, all over London. There's a key room organization there called Encounter. And when you go to London, they send you all over London, England, everywhere, all over England. And then, after that, everyone in my neighborhood kept asking me, Ahuva, are you going to write a second book? And I said, no, leave me alone. I'm exhausted. I'm not writing any more books. However, if an author gets a good enough story, you'll always write another book. I'm sure we may have some young people in here that may become authorists themselves. I was asked by HTOR Fellowship Program, before the just when the Antifada broke out, about 8 years ago, to come to the Old City and lecture to the smallest group of girls I had ever lectured to. They were from South Africa and Australia. I walked in the room. I was sharing my story. They're not from a religious background at all. And everyone was in the room laughing when I told them the story about Abraham Moshe asking me why was Ahuva still black. I was telling them the story about how I moved from one black neighborhood to another black neighborhood. Everyone in the room was laughing. There was this lovely young girl that sat in the front row, blonde hair, blue eyes, and she cried throughout the entire lecture. And I could not imagine what inner turmoil my words were causing in this young girl's life. End of lecture, I'm surrounded by all of these lovely young women, and they're asking me all of these difficult questions like, what do I do when I go home and I want to keep kosher? Can I eat in my mother's non-kosher kitchen? Do I have to cover my elbows? Do I have to stop wearing my pants? And I answered all of their questions as I was taught by my rabbis and rabbisons at Neve Yerushalayim. All of a sudden, this lovely young girl with the blonde hair and blue eyes came over to me, and she was still crying. And she looks at me, and she says this. She says, Ahuva, why are Orthodox Jews so insensitive? And I said, well, I don't think we're insensitive. I said, there's a fence around the Torah, and we have to cut it straight. And she said, I'm from birth, I'm religious from birth, and I want nothing to do with Orthodox Judaism. She had gone off to Derek. And I said to her this. I said, here's my email address. My first book is coming out. I said, I think it'll be very helpful for you. Now, when I left that room, I did not think I was going to hear from her again, and I did not. A year and a half later, first book is out. Rabbi Tchaikovsky at Neve Yerushalayim asked me to come up and lecture. And I'm extremely excited because I studied there for 1 year. And I'm walking down the hallways like the good old days, and the hallways are buzzing. I go up to the Beit Midrash, the study hall. And I walk in the study hall. It's about 150 people, the girls in there, and my rabbis and rebbesons, Rabbi Kellerman, Rebbeson Heller, Rebbeson Rodman, and Rebbeson Leah Feldman. She was still the house mother there at that time. And I'm sharing my story. Rarely, rarely, rarely do I forget a face. And I'm sharing some of the funny parts of my story. And I kept looking at this lovely girl with blonde hair and blue eyes, and I'm trying to figure out, where do I know this girl from? But I had to stay focused. End of lecture, and I'm autographing books for the girls there, and all of a sudden I hear this girl say in this South African accent, now this is the best South African accent I can do. She said, Ahuva, do you remember who I am? And before I raised my head, I said, it's that girl from South Africa. When I looked at her, I couldn't believe my eyes. I looked at her and I said, what happened to you? And she said to me this. She was dressed so modestly this time, she could pass any Rebbeson scrutinization. And she said to me this. She says, Ahuva, I want you to know when you shared the story about your Baptist grandmother and how she taught you the Tehillim when you were 4 years old, how you were davening from your sitter 3 times a day, you taught your own self the Hebrew alphabet, and here I was, religious from birth, and had considered those prayers as ancient, inapplicable, and irrelevant. She says, Ahuva, I want you to know I'm back on the derrick. I'm keeping kosher. She says, I'm saying the Shema twice a day. She says, I'm studying Perkei Avot. By now, I'm almost in tears, and I'm still surrounded by all of these lovely young girls. I looked at her, and I said this. I said, everyone in my neighborhood has asked me if I would write a second book. I said, if you would tell me in your own words what happened to you in that room that day, I said, I'll write that book. My second book is entitled Gifts of a Stranger, And the lead-off story is called The Returning of a Lost Object. We don't use her actual name. We call her Shira Taylor. When I lectured in South Africa, I want you to know her parents were two of the humblest people I had ever met. And they were so happy that their daughter had returned to her Yiddish type. And not only that, Shira is married now and she has a child, and we always stay in contact via email. And it's always, always a pleasure to hear from her and be in communication with her. I'm going to explain to you how I came to the realization that I was converting to Judaism. I was asked by Shulamit Cass Nelson, because I had met her, to come to Old Pan Akiva to study Hebrew. So here I was in Israel studying Hebrew, and there was a fast day coming up, and the fast was called Tisha B'Av. And I didn't know what Tisha B'Av represented because I was an ordained minister. However, we had a tradition in our family, whenever anyone was ill, we went on a fast, so I love fasting. So I called a spiritual teacher who is a Kohen, and I said to him, what does this fast represent? He said, Ahuva Tisha B'Av is when the Jewish people mourn the loss of the first and second temple. And I said, that's interesting. I said, so, and I said, why am I experiencing such heaviness with this fast? I said, that's very unusual for me. And he simply said this. He says, Ahuva, he says, you're still davening from your siddur three times a day. And I said, yes. And he said, you're fasting for Tisha B'Av. And I said, yes. He said, Ahuva, just keep davening. And I thought that was a very strange answer, but I said, he's a Kohen, and they taught us in the Bay Yerushalayim that they have a very special neshama. And I said, I'll do what he says. I had a group that was scheduled to come to Israel for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but there was a bus bombing. They canceled, so I stayed. I stayed at the Mariah Hotel. I met this lovely family that lived in Old Katzimon. They invited me to spend Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur with them. I went to an Orthodox shul for the first time in my life. I walked in the shul, and I thought it was very authentic. And not only that, when we left the Bet Knesset Yakar, we were walking down the streets in Yerushalayim, and everyone was saying Shana Tova to them. They said it to me. I said it back to them. I didn't even know what it meant at that time. I went to Rabbi Mordechai Goldberg's house, and he had to explain to me why we were taking this apple, dipping the apple in the honey. He also had to explain to me why this fish head was on the table, because it looked absolutely repulsive, and it looked like the two eyes were staring at me the entire night. Finally, I got the courage, and I asked Rabbi Mordechai, I said, we don't have to eat this thing, do we? He said, no, Ahuva. It represents that man is the head, not the tail. Finally, we're coming up on the holiest day of the entire year, Yom Kippur, and I asked his wife, I said, Abigail, what do I need to do to prepare myself for Yom Kippur? She said, Ahuva, the Jewish people fast, but you're not Jewish and you're not obligated. And I simply said to her, if the Jewish people fast, I am going to fast as well. You should see me in shul on Yom Kippur now, because it's like I have a reenactment of this experience every year. I went, I did the fast. I went to Bet Knesset Yakar in Old Katzimon. I walked from my hotel. I walked in, and I walked in on Kol Nidre. I sobbed all the way through Kol Nidre. I did not know at that time that Kol Nidre is a nullification of all future vows. Neither did I know that you do not talk during Kol Nidre. However, I certainly know that tonight. I looked at this lady standing next to me, and I said, please forgive me. I have no idea what is going on. She just tapped me on the shoulder and kept passing over the clinic. When I left Bet Knesset Yakar, I walked down the streets in Yerushalayim. This was the holiest environment I have ever been in my life. I could feel the Kedusha. There wasn't a leaf on a tree moving, a bird in the sky. There wasn't a plane, a kid on a bike, car, nothing but the peace of the Almighty. There is a pasuk in Isaiah 40 that says this. Every valley should be exalted. Every hill should be made low. The crooked places should be made straight, and the rough places should be made plain. And the glory of Hashem should be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of Hashem has spoken it. I felt like that's exactly what had happened to me in my life, because I had been on this search mission, if you will, for 48 years, and it all culminated in the courts of Kol Nidre. That's how I knew I came to the realization that I was converting to Judaism. The next day, I called the Goldberg family and told them I was converting. They did not seem so surprised. The next person I called was my spiritual teacher, the Kohen, and I told him I was converting. He didn't seem so surprised either. There were numerous people that knew me, and they already knew I was converting before I even came to this realization. That is my story, and I always like to close out with some pasuk that was always very dear to my heart. And the one that comes into my mind this evening is simply that he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall dwell under the shadow of the Almighty. And there's another one in Psalms 91 that says, Lord, thou hast been my dwelling place through all generations. Trust in Hashem. Have Emunah v'Tachin b'Hashem. And now I'm going to close out, and it's your time for questions and answers. So much. That's a very profound question. Before I converted to Judaism, for 5 years, I stopped practicing Christianity. I knew I was going through a transition. I did not know what the transition was, but I resigned all my responsibilities at the last church I used to attend. And not only that, I spent 14 years studying, literally studying the Torah. But at that time, Lahavdil, I have to make a separation, it did include the Christian teaching. So on January 1st, instead of out partying all night long on New Year's Eve, I would be studying. I've always loved reading. That is just who I am. And I would start my Bible every year January 1st. And by December 31st, I would complete it. And the more I studied the Torah, the more discrepancies I found in Christianity. And I know the chapters in Isaiah that you are referring to, but I'm going to tell you something. That's one of the most beautiful books, in my humble opinion, in the prophets. And all the chapters in there are beautiful. And that chapter that they are referring to is referring to the Jewish people and not Yeshka. They just don't know that.
Anybody else? Questions? Anybody else? Specific questions? Anything? Any questions? We got a lot of interesting questions on the Shabbos. Nobody? Lauren?
The question is, my grandparents, how did they become so religiously evolved? Let me say this about my grandparents. My grandparents were two of the godliest people I have ever been privileged in meeting in my life. And if there's ever two people that have an affinity to me, it's Jews and African Americans. If black people didn't have a belief in God, when they got off those slave ships, when they were brought over here, they wouldn't have been able to survive. And so my grandparents, they were not educated people, but they had a simple belief in God. They had fear of God, and they believed what they read in the Bible, and they followed it to the best of their ability. In my humble opinion, if black folks had been introduced to Judaism when they got off those ships, they would not be having the difficulties in their neighborhoods that they're having today, because the rabbis would have found a solution for it. So my grandparents were just God-fearing people, and they taught down what they knew to their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And in my humble opinion, I may not be standing here before you as a Jew tonight if it hadn't been from the teaching and watching the lives of my grandparents. And as I told you earlier today and last night, I went every summer to visit them because I knew something was missing in my life. It was because of my grandmother that I made a commitment to prayer, because she was an 82-year-old woman still praying very, very fervently, and she was my role model.
Beautiful. Down there we got...
There's a two-volume set. It's just called Art Scroll Tehillim, and it's a two-volume set. And even if you go online, you'll be able to find that two-volume set of Art Scroll. But it gives all the history of each verse. There is an introduction to each Tehillim. It gives you a background of what was going on in King David's life at the time he wrote the Tehillim. And if you want to learn the historical background, it's all there.
Anybody else?
Thank you. That's a very good question. Yeah, mine was a gradual process. As I said, I studied for 14 years. That siddur that I bought up in Safas, one particular morning I happened to open up to the brachot that said this: my God, the soul you created in me is pure. You created it, you fashioned it, you formed it, you breathed it into me, you would take it away from me and restore it to me in times to come. When I read that for the first time, I realized that I wasn't born a poor, helpless sinner, as I was taught. And that's what started a lot of my searching, researching, buying every book I knew about the Jewish people, history of the Jewish people, anything about the Jewish people. And when I came to Israel, I think really what happened to me when I came on that first visit was a soul resonance. My soul just connected with the land. And, you know, our rabbis of blessed memory have two opinions. One opinion is that we already had a Jewish neshama. The second opinion is that the Jewish neshama is a born again or made a quickened or made alive. I personally believe that I had a Jewish neshama the entire time. I've always been totally opposite and different from any of my siblings. That's always the case in most families, but I'm still totally opposite and different today, but I still have a relationship with my family, and I'm very happy about that.
Anybody else?
Yes. Yeah, I was not Catholic. I was the question is, how do I connect, or do I still have any relationship with my previous friends? I was Protestant, and basically, I don't really have too many of those relationships any longer because our lives are totally different. However, I still have some of my old flight attendant friends, and she is Christian, and she came to Baia Vagan to visit me, and she had a lovely visit. And when we were walking down, we've known each other now for about 30-some years. And when she came to Baia Vagan, and we were walking down the street, she said, "It's so peaceful here." And this reminds me of when we were children going up, how, you know, things were just very carefree. And she really loves my neighborhood. And she said she's going to come back and visit me again. I don't really have too many of those old friendships because we have totally different lifestyles. What their opinion was when I made the announcement to the pastor that I reported to that I was not going to observe Christianity anymore, no one questioned me. I mean, I was a very learned person, so there was nothing they questioned me about, really.
Anybody else? Okay, thank you so much.
If anyone bought books, I can autograph your books for you out.
I mean, I have like a main course now. Do you want to buy books now? Or do you want to...
Oh, no. Oh, they're still eating. I had two bowls of soup.
Okay. We'll be signing books. Okay. Later, whatever you're ready. There's more books for sale.
The soup was so good.
And there are DVDs for sale. And there's a new book coming out. We're going to pre-order. Hope it will sign on Sunday. We'll ship it out.
You know what? Let me say this before I close out. This has been so organized, and I was telling Rabbi Oritz, every place I lectured Latu Ellis was this organized. We came in, the kids had the sheets there, and I said I should take these kids with me. Thank you so much.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful, wonderful.